returned to the marina after a morning of fruitless searching for Eric Scarsbury. He had visited three American living compounds but had turned up nothing. Exhausted from the midday heat, he pulled his jeep into the marina lot. Usually he parked in the shade, even though there was only a single wandering strip of it, cast by a ramshackle storage shed. Today, however, another car had stolen that coveted spot. It was a black Toyota with newish plates and a Quran on the dashboard. He stood for a moment and puzzled over the car. Perhaps he had a new neighbour, a businessman or a weekend sailor. As he walked down the unsteady pier, the old wood creaked beneath his weight and the boats bobbed in sympathetic rhythm. He scanned the rows for the new neighbour's boat, but instead he spotted a woman on the pier. He couldn't see who it was. She wore a black robe and a scarf with a burqa. Only her eyes showed. When she saw Nair, she stood up straighter, and he knew instantly that it was Miss Hijazi. He didn't know any other women, and she had recognized him. What was she doing here? He nearly tripped on a coil of rope. As he drew closer, he recognized the shape of her shoulders. She waited for him to speak. "Miss Hijazi," he said. "Mr. Sharkey," she replied, pointedly not extending her hand. "Ehlen Waselen," he said, not sure what to do. "Where's Othman?"
"At work."
"Does he know that you're here?"
"Yes, he gave me the address."
"He did?" She lowered her eyes.
"I didn't come here for the wrong reasons, Mr. Sharkey."
He heard a thump in a nearby boat.
"Come," he said, ushering her down the pier.
"My boat's over there." Leaping onto the top deck, he offered her a hand, but she ignored it. He motioned to the cabin entrance, descended the ladder and turned to help Miss Hijazi, but he didn't want to touch her or appear to be looking up her skirts, so he moved away. Gracefully, she stepped off the ladder. "Have a seat," he said, motioning to the dinette and the small sofa opposite. No proper woman would descend on him like this. If the neighbours had seen her, who knew what would happen? "I've only come here for business reasons, Mr. Sharkey. I hope you realise that." She seemed nervous. Her fingers worried the hem of her sleeve. "Othman tells me that you know Nuf was pregnant." He nodded. But she wasn't looking at him, so he had to say yes. "I was hoping you could help me get some DNA samples," she said, "to determine who the baby's father was." She kept her eyes on the floor, and he kept his on the stove. "I need them from everyone," she went on. "Her fiancé, her cousins, her escort." She drew herself up. "I realize I'm making you uncomfortable."
"No, you're not," he lied.
"Yes, I am, but I'm doing it for Nuf. This is not about you or me. This is about a woman who died and who needs someone to find the truth. You're the only one Othman trusts, the only one he can count on." Nair crossed his arms and said nothing, but the idea that Othman trusted him softened his mood somewhat. "I'm only asking," she said, "because I was hoping you could tell me more about the escort. He seems like a primary suspect."
"I don't think so."
He gave a brief synopsis of what Mohammed had told him about Eric Scarsbury. Except for a subtle tightening in her shoulders, she did not seem surprised. "I was searching for Eric's apartment this morning," he said. "I imagine it's on an American compound. I know of 6 different ones. I've checked 3 so far, but I haven't found the right one yet." For a moment, she didn't speak. "I'd like to come with you," she said finally, standing up.
"No.
No, I can do this alone."
"You don't have to drive me," she said. "I have my own transportation if you'd rather follow me."
He hesitated. One part of him revolted against the idea of escorting his friend's fiancé into an American compound, of all places, but he knew she was right. They were doing this for Nuf. Grudgingly, he had to admit that he admired her persistence for the sake of truth. "All right," he said, "since you have your own transportation."
They reached the gates of the American compound. To the left, a neon blue sign read Club Jed in ornate mock Arabic script. He followed Miss Hijazi's car along the checkerboard streets to a parking lot that was crowded with pickups and SUVs. They climbed out of their cars. The club was empty, except for a sprinkling of tired customers in peripheral seats. Miss Hijazi seemed subdued, perhaps a little nervous. With a casual movement, she lifted her burqa. Nair tried not to look at her face, but he couldn't help it. He noticed she was pretty in a quirky way, her nose a little long, her lips a bit crooked. If she had a speck of modesty, she'd lower her veil in front of all these strangers, but he noticed that no one stared. They went through a sliding door to an outdoor patio where iron cafe tables were scattered about. In the corner, a bronzed, wrinkled man sat on a lawn chair. He was sipping ice water and studying the newspaper on the table before him. On instinct, Nair approached the man and asked about Eric Scarsbury.
"You mean Scarsbury," the man said. "Yeah, I know him. He lives here. He's on Peachtree."
The man gave directions and the house number.
"I haven't seen him in a while. Is he in some kind of trouble?"
"No, but he may be able to help us." Nair saw that Miss Hijazi had hung back by the door. Her burqa was down again. Nair thanked the man and excused himself. He went back to Miss Hijazi. "I think I've got it," he said. "You can go back to your escort if you like." She didn't reply, but followed him as he went around the pool and crossed a very green lawn. Her driver was still waiting, sitting in the car, leisurely reading the Quran. She didn't climb into the car right away. She seemed reluctant to say goodbye, and it surprised him to realize that his perception of her had altered slightly. She was not exactly modest, but not brazen either. She was something in between, shifting like a mirage. For an awkward moment, Nair stood there, trying not to look at her, not certain how to say goodbye. "Thank you, Nair," she said. He was so surprised to hear her say his name that his goodbye came too late, after she'd turned away. The man who opened the giant walnut door was in his 40s, with greying blonde hair and keen blue eyes. He looked Nair up and down.
"May I help you?"
"I'm looking for Eric Scarsbury."
"I'm Eric."
"My name is Nair Asharki. I'm a friend of the Shrawis. I'd like to talk to you, if you don't mind." Eric seemed to hesitate, but he stepped aside.
"Well, any friend of the Shrawis is a friend of mine. Please come in."
Nair entered a cool foyer.
"What is this about?" Eric asked.
"The death of Nuf Ashrawi." Eric nodded sternly and led Nair down an elegant hallway and into an enormous sitting room. The room might have been welcoming, were it not for the books, thousands of them, each as dusty and ragged as if they'd been carried to the desert and back.
"Tea?" Eric asked. "Or coffee?"
Nair faced him. "Tea is fine, thank you." Eric nodded and disappeared. Nair glanced at the books. Archaeology textbooks, every one of them. He had never seen so many in one place. Eric returned with a pitcher of iced tea and two glasses, a large plate of meats, bean paste and breads, spinach pastries, and eggplant slices arranged like leaves.
"I always believe in treating guests as if they were kings," Eric said, his nut-brown voice deepened by the food. "It's one of the things I love about this country."
"You're an archaeologist?"
"No, I'm an oil research analyst. My roommate is the archaeologist."
"How do you know the Shrawis?"
"Oh, they funded my roommate's research. They're very generous donors."
"Is that how you met Nuf?" If the question bothered Eric, there was only a slight unease to show for it. I really didn't know her that well. I have it on good authority that you were helping her plan an escape to New York. Eric set his bread on the table. His mouth looked pinched. I have no idea what you mean. According to my sources, you were going to help her get a visa, an apartment, maybe admission to a university. Everything she would need. Nayer reached into his pocket and took out the key that Mohammed had given him. Eric blanched. It's a key to your apartment in New York. You gave this key to Noof. You told her she could stay there for a while. Eric was silent, so Nayer went on. There was money in it. Probably a lot of money. Who knows? Maybe you even liked her. She was young and sweet. It was the perfect plan. Until you discovered she was pregnant. Eric spluttered in disbelief, but Nayer ignored it. You can either tell me the truth now, and trust me to be discreet, or I'll bring this whole matter to the family, Nayer said. I'm sure they'll want to know all about it, even if it does ruin their relationship with your roommate. All right. Eric exhaled with a noticeable tremor. I was helping her. She had no one. I was her only link to freedom, but I had absolutely nothing to do with her death. And why would I kill her? She was about to pay me close to ½ a million reals. He frowned at his guest. Now I have nothing. When was the last time you saw her? Nayer asked. 2 days before she disappeared. And I swear I didn't touch her. I didn't even know she was pregnant. What happened at your last meeting? Nothing. Eric's voice was firm. We went over the details again. I gave her the key. Where were you on the day she disappeared? I was here in Jeddah, at work. I'm going to need your office number. But first, if you're as innocent as you claim to be, I'm sure you won't mind giving me a DNA sample. He couldn't immediately determine the effect of his request. Eric sat fixed in his chair, staring curiously at him. Of course you can have my DNA, he said finally. It was still early evening when he reached Mohammed's house. The escort was home, and he willingly gave up a sample of his hair. Nayer bagged it and went straight to the examiner's office. He didn't bother trying to find Miss Hijazi. He simply left the samples in a paper bag at the desk. The security guard promised to give them to her. When he asked if Nayer wanted to leave a message, he said no.